Y'all, it's Jey Uso from WWE.
And I'm Jimmy Uso.
Chumba Casino and WWE are hyped for the biggest event of the summer, SummerSlam.
I know, I can't wait.
There's nothing better to do while we're waiting
than playing Chumba Casino.
Sign up today and you could win a VIP experience
with Chumba Casino and WWE for SummerSlam.
So what are you waiting for?
Play Chumba Casino and enter for your chance to win. Let's Chumba.
Yeah. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See T's and C's. 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dicks.com/scorecardplus for details.
Hour number two, Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game, streaming on the Game Nashville app. Chase McCabe, Darren McFarland, Willie Donick here with you. You just made the list coming up at 12 o'clock, but right now we say hello to Jeff Burton, former driver and now analyst with NASCAR on NBC. They head to the Talladega Super Speedway in Alabama this weekend with coverage beginning on Sunday at 12 o'clock Central with NASCAR America pre-race, followed by the Yellowwood 500 at 1 o'clock Central on NBC. Jeff, how you doing?
I'm good. How you guys doing?
You know, we're fantastic. Got that new schedule out, and NBC's portion will kick off in our market at the Nashville Super Speedway. And I can remember a couple of years ago, I had you on my podcast, and we talked about this city and how important it would be for NASCAR to get back here. I know it's a different track than you and I talked about. We talked about the fairgrounds, but how excited are you to see NASCAR and the Cup Series back in the Nashville market?
Extremely excited. Nashville and NASCAR belong together. If you look at a long, long, long history of NASCAR being at the Nashville Fairgrounds, country music and NASCAR go together. Of course, you know, Nashville has grown so much, and you guys have so much to offer to so many different people. I think for NASCAR, it's important to be there. Nashville has just changed so much, and just a great opportunity for the two entities to get back together, and both are gonna be better for it. Just a great opportunity for both.
Yeah, and looking forward to it. And you know, who knows, the fairgrounds could be in play in a couple of years, have a couple of races here. But with the schedule release, this is the first time in a long time, Jeff, and you've been in the sport for a long time, that we have seen as much of a shakeup with the schedule. What did you think about it overall?
Well, yeah, I don't know that I've, in all my time around this sport, that I have seen that many changes, over consecutive years, much less in one release. I mean, you're talking about a major change, a major shift, leaving some areas, going to some areas that we've never been to before, going back to some areas a couple times, increasing the number of road course races. It's really just it's just a sign of the times, meaning that, you know, NASCAR has been saying for about a year and a half that there, 2 years, there's going to be a major shift. That shift is going to represent what the fan base has said they want to see, and that's what happened. And you know, going back to Darlington twice, going back to Nashville, going back to Atlanta, taking away some 2.5 mile and a half races to and replace them with either shorter tracks or with road courses. Those are things that the fans have asked for, and NASCAR brought it. The craziest thing is the dirt race that got added. I mean, not only is it a dirt race for the Cup Series, it's at Bristol Motor Speedway where they're going to come in and bring in however many. I don't know. I can only imagine how many dump truck loads of dirt they're going to have to bring in to do that. That's in itself crazy. Like, if you told me that was going to happen 3 years ago, there's no way. So just an amazing amount of changes. You know, when you go back, Nate Ryan with NBC Sports wrote something yesterday or late last night on Twitter that kind of walked through the history of, you know, the realignment and schedules. It was fascinating to read. And he went back into history and mapped, you know, what NASCAR said at those times and made changes because fans wanted to see different things or whatever it happened to be. And it's amazing how history is repeating itself. And it's also amazing how they said, if things don't work, we're going to move it again. And that's what just happened. So just a continued evolution. I don't know, you know, I don't know how else to say it. I've just never seen that many changes, but overall, you know, greatly positive.
Yeah, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. Jeff Burton, NASCAR and NBC here with us, Talladega this weekend. We'll get to that. You mentioned the road courses, adding more road courses, or, you know, the Indy road course is going to be a part of it. We already know the Roval. They'll do the Daytona road course for the Busch Clash. How much did you enjoy road racing? I know it's kind of a love-hate thing with some drivers, but how did you feel about it when you were driving?
So it's fun. Like, it's really fun to do. The fact that you're doing it with less experience than some other people, and the fact that every race matters so much in regard to points and the opportunity to win a championship, that sucks some of the fun out of it, right? Because it made it very, very serious business. I will say this, that was a different time. We had two races on road courses. And we're talking about having five now, and we're talking about having races in the playoffs that are road courses. So you better sharpen up, and you better make it a huge part of your repertoire. There's more, think about this, there's more road course races than there are super speedway races. There's two races at Daytona, two races at Talladega, total of four races, obviously, and there's going to be five road course races. So we used to talk about when we were discussing how to build our team for the upcoming year, where to spend the money, where to put the emphasis, there were times that we would say, you know what, good chance you're going to wreck at Daytona. You know, we're going to put some effort into it, but we're going to put way more effort into other things. Well, now you can't do that. And we used to do the same thing with road courses. We used to say, you know, the same thing. Well, now you can't do that. There's five of those things in there. That's a lot of points. That's a lot of opportunities. And I tell you something else it does. It opens the door for consideration of drivers that you wouldn't have considered. So think about this for just a moment. We have two drivers in the Xfinity Series today, Chase Briscoe and Austin Cindric. Both are really, really good road racers. If I'm a car owner, I'm sitting there thinking, these two guys could win me a race next year on these road courses. And they also have some experience on those road courses that the Cup drivers don't have. So that's going to provide some opportunity, in my opinion, for some young drivers to get an opportunity in cars that they may been on the edge about getting that ride. This could push them over the edge.
How much have your son Harrison, of course, is in the Xfinity Series for Joe Gibbs Racing. How much have you worked with him on some of these different tracks, whether it's a road course or maybe things that he didn't have experience with as he's advanced his career?
Yeah, so we you know, I believe that you have to work really hard and you have to put a lot of emphasis on as much as you can, but you also have to focus on enough things to be able to do what you're doing right. So we worked on road course stuff, but not to the degree that we worked on other things. We had an unbelievable plan in place for him to get tons of road course experience this year, and COVID-19 shut all that down. We had an incredible amount of things that he was going to be doing to sharpen his road course skills, to get better at it, and it just all got canceled. I mean, every single thing but one got canceled. Then on top of that, all the practices got canceled in the NASCAR series. So a good plan gone bad. We had it all mapped out. It was part of an overall plan that we put together 2 years ago and just didn't think about planning for COVID.
I don't think anybody did, Jeff. How hard is it for you to balance sometimes when you're in the booth and you're calling a race, but you're watching your son? I mean, we've seen it over the years in NASCAR that whether it's DW cheering on Michael or Ned Jarrett and Dale Jarrett, but now you're in that seat of you have a job to do, but you're also being a dad at the same time.
Well, so what's important for me is that when I talk to, I had a conversation with Ross Chastain yesterday in the Xfinity Series, and he races against my son, and he actually made a comment to me. He said, "Jeff, I don't know how you do it." He said, "You call it like you see it, and I don't know how you do it." And that's how it has to be. Like, I have to call it the way I see it. Sometimes it may be best to say nothing, right? Sometimes I'll let my counterparts talk about something that, because every competitor deserves to know that the people that are the analyst, they're paying attention to the entire picture, not something with blinders on, not something with preconceived notions. That's not fair to all the other competitors. So, I work for NBC, but I really feel like I work for the race fans, and I feel like I owe it to the competitors to know what I'm talking about and to represent it fairly. And if I stick to those two things, it's okay. Now, there's times I have to come home and say, "Harrison, I said something about you today. You're not going to like me." and he knows it, and we laugh about it. But that's my job, and I had my job before he had his. So I'm going to do it the way I need to do it.
So we know one thing that you can expect this weekend at Talladega is the unexpected. I was looking at, who's the favorite? There's no clear-cut favorite because you can't really predict that in super speedway racing. But we're in the middle of the playoffs, and this is always the wild card. So what are you looking for at Talladega this weekend?
Yeah, everything you just said prior, that's right. It's so hard even on a normal weekend to try to predict what's going to happen at Talladega. It's such a crazy race. I think that Joey Logano and Brad Keselowski have proven to me to be really, really good at plate racing. The Hendrick cars are really, really fast. I think that when you look at the points and with the Roval coming up next, meaning that's just as volatile of a race as Talladega, I think they're going to have to push. I think they're going to have to go make something happen. I don't think they can just ride around and not get points. So I expect to see a very aggressive race. I expect to see people fighting to get stage points. I think track position is going to matter. So I expect to see an aggressive race. I don't think there's a few people in the field, Kevin Harvick, there's a Denny Hamlin. There's a few people in the field that can probably be best served by just staying out of the mess. But the majority of people in the field have too much to lose if they don't go get points, and that means you have to be aggressive and pushing to make something happen.
Well, we're looking forward to watching it this Sunday with coverage beginning at 12 o'clock Central Time on NBC with the NASCAR America pre-race show and then the Yellowwood 500 at 1 also on NBC. And the Xfinity Series will be tomorrow on NBCSN at 2:30 Central. Jeff, appreciate the time as always. We look forward to actually seeing you guys at the racetrack and not just at Charlotte in the near future.
I'll be glad when that happens.
I know you miss it, but we look forward to seeing you in Nashville next June.
I'm so excited back coming to Nashville. It's going to be a party. It's going to be a great time, and I appreciate you guys having me on today.
Thank you, sir. Jeff Burton, NASCAR on NBC. We'll have more coming here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Appreciate Jeff Burton for joining us. We'll talk about the LSU Tigers at the bottom of this hour as they come to town to take on Vanderbilt. That game will kick at 6:30 Saturday night. Vanderbilt, a 3-touchdown underdog. That game will be shown on SEC Network and can be heard where, Chase?
What's that?
oh, we got
distraction.
No, I
what's all you're doing now? What were you doing?
No, this was actually me. I took a that break was a little shorter than I anticipated and took a bathroom break and got back a little late.
I said LSU Vanderbilt, besides SEC Network, is there any other place they can hear it?
You can hear that on 93.3 Classic Hits.
Wow.
Our sister station.
Look at
the
that.
The new home of the Vanderbilt Commodores.
Line? Yes, there you go. Okay, we have the cue card out now. Okay, good.
Jason, your line. What?
Bathroom break cannot get him distracted. He still came through.
Well, so this is where, in working from home, and we don't see each other, this is where I was faced with a choice. Do I just admit that I didn't hear what you said, you know, I only heard the tail end, or do I take the tail end and I take a guess on what game you were talking about, and I could have gotten it wrong.
Guess wrong. Yeah.
Right. Which then would just opens up even more razzing, but I just figured I'd just be honest and say, yeah, I didn't hear what you said. So
you went, there's a big pause. Huh?
What did you say now?
Speaking of games,
it's
Ian
like
Rappaport.
The teacher calls on you sometimes. We've all been there, right? Willie, what do you think? What? I was called Starman by my math teacher 1 year, senior year in high school. Stargazing, daydreaming, like not having any clue what the answer was when called upon.
Mm-hmm. I don't know if it's about you not having a clue about the answer. You're just a little bit on a delay sometimes.
Could be.
You can come up with the answer.
Does happen.
I feel confident.
Well, depending on the class. Depending on the class and the question.
What was the class where you may not have known the answer?
Oh, definitely some math classes.
Yeah.
And some science classes.
Yeah, those aren't my favorites either. Ian Rappaport has put out there that the Titans-Steelers game that we've been kind of talking about this week will indeed be played in Week 7.
And you got an email on this too, Darren, just so you know. The Titans have sent it out as well.
Let me hit refresh.
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 Line.
Refresh 11:20. Oh, it just came out. I needed to refresh. It literally just came out. Okay.
There you go.
So, yeah, it'll be on Sunday, October 25th, Nissan Stadium, back to the original noon kickoff. And, of course, that was supposed to be Tennessee's scheduled bye week. The Steelers, meanwhile, their scheduled bye week was supposed to be Week 8.
So Steelers-Ravens will move from Week 7 to Week 8 on Sunday, November 1st. Steelers-Titans now have a bye, and the Ravens' bye originally set for Week 8 will be Week 7.
Mm-hmm.
So there will be a quiz later.
There will be a
easy
quiz
peasy.
Later.
All our amateur scouting people or scheduling people, we had that all planned out on Monday, didn't we?
We kind of did. Yeah, we've talked
or
about
Tuesday,
it this week.
I guess it was.
Yeah. Yeah. The Titans have also put out that tickets purchased, remember that was the first game to sell out for that date, will be honored on the October 25th date. So there you go. Now, due to the date change, this is something that's a little
bit
interesting.
I was just about to ask that.
Capacity now for the Titans-Steelers game has increased to 15%, which originally it was at 10%. So now it's been up to 15%, which would allow another 3,500 fans in, which means limited 300-level seats will be available to PSL founders who currently do not have tickets for that game, and I certainly know some PSL holders who did not get tickets to that game because their first day was on Thursday, and that game was already sold out by them. So, by then, it'll be interesting to see who can get in and get tickets to that now. I wonder why they're going to be in the 300 level.
I guess for distancing?
Spread them out.
Right, but I mean, it's 3,500 people, like club and lower couldn't handle 3,500 more people at a safe distance? Just asking for a friend.
I think the club could be pretty tight, right?
Yeah. I don't really know the answer, but
and if you're erring on the side of caution, especially in light of what's been happening, it's probably a good thing.
True. Okay, quiz time. This is not football related. This is baseball related.
Okay.
Now we're really going to put you to the test.
2001.
Fernando Tatis, that is incorrect. Fernando Tatis Jr., you'll find out why that is completely incorrect. Will Myers and Fernando Tatis Jr., by the way, did you see the bat flip or bat throw by Tatis Jr. last night on his monster slam? But also Will Myers, both of them who are teammates, had two homers in the same postseason game last night. And do you realize in MLB history, that is only the second time two teammates have had two home runs in the same postseason game? Second time ever joining whom?
Willie's going to be better equipped to get this.
Man, my wheels are
that's
turning.
Not a good that's not a good sign for Willie. Wow. Yeah.
I got to think about now just, games.
Here's your hint. Hold on. Here's your hint. Okay. Chase throughout, what did you say, 2001?
Yes, because that's the last time
the Braves won. I knew it was a playoff series. Reference. I know. 19 years. He is way, way, way off with that date. In other words, go way back. There's
go way
hint.
Back. All right, give me the decade, just because well, in the interest of time.
Well, I think Murderers
if I give
Row
you,
probably
if I give,
has to
I was
be
gonna say,
considered.
If I give you the decade, you're probably going to nail it. Probably, you will nail it, yes.
Let's just say, is it
post-World
War II?
Go back within the last 100 years.
Oh, gosh. Is it post-World War II?
The hint now is, I'm just telling you, however I answer any of your questions, you're going to get it. Fine, 30s.
1930s. Okay, so I guess I would just guess Ruth and Gehrig?
Yeah, of course. Okay. Like I said. If I gave
I'm not taking full credit. I was just deducing.
Because I even said it's
got to
be
guess.
Murderer's Row, you know, yeah. somewhere.
Yeah. So I knew you guys would get on the right track. It was hard to give any hints without you guys nailing it.
Well, that was an incredible performance last night, and I know we were all kind of flipping back between that game and the craziness of the Broncos Jets game, the train wreck. You know the. Bad football, the Jets being the Jets, that's entertaining.
By the way, did anybody see Vic Fangio at the end of the game?
I didn't. Let's get to that in a moment. But let's give the Padres their due, because not only did all of these home runs take place, but it was from the sixth inning on. They were down 4-0 early. They were down 6-2 and then started this home run barrage. It was really something to see. And that's Petco Park. That's one of the places where it's supposed to be hard to hit home runs. It was incredible.
Yeah.
So Tatis, he really put the team on his shoulders. Will Myers has had a great year, kind of under the radar. He was sort of off the grid for a while. When he came up, he was supposed to be a budding superstar. He kind of went several years out in San Diego of injuries and oblivion, like almost lost his job. Mm-hmm. But he's come on. So that and Machado hit a bomb too. That was and they needed every one of those because the Cardinals kept coming back too. That was a heck of a game. So the deciding game is tonight. Now, what were you going to say about Fangio?
Well, did you see? And I'm not sure exactly. He was clearly ticked off at Adam Gase and the Jets. Of course, who doesn't Adam Gase tick off?
The Jets fans are pissed off at Adam Gase too. So.
Basically everybody is, but did you see Fangio at the end of the game? You know,
yep.
Customarily, what do coaches do?
Handshake.
Yep. How'd that go last night?
He bolted.
Did you hear the mic accident? You could tell they cut it quickly because he said some naughty words. He was grabbing his players going, get to the blanking locker room.
Right. So
he had no interest at all. In fact, basically was doing a stare down. To Adam Gase on the way to the locker room, it did not go to the center of the field.
Well, he said after the game, quote, well, there were just a couple of personal fouls there at the end, and our sideline was getting pissed off about it, and I just wanted to avoid any confrontation at the end of the game and having it get ugly there. So I tried to get our guys to leave quickly just to avoid anything happening there. I thought it was the prudent thing to do. Adam Gase didn't take issue with that explanation.
How many personal foul penalties were there? Five?
A lot.
I think there were five.
There were a lot of 15-yard penalties.
Which benefited the Broncos. The Broncos may have won the game because of those.
No doubt.
Maybe he should have gone out to thank Adam Gase. Thanks, guys, for being so undisciplined. We appreciate all those yards. They had like 11 penalties for 100 and something yards in a year where they're not calling very many penalties.
And I'm going to
guess. Get personal fouls.
The Sam Darnold train for Chase is still not rolling down the tracks. You don't seem to be a fan of Sam Darnold.
I'm not.
Adam
I'm not
Gase or not Adam Gase?
Nope. I say
it's just a bad team, though. It's not all him. I mean, he's not great, but man.
Listen, did you see Joe Flacco last night? Joe Flacco was perfect when he came in last night. Like, come on.
Was he 2 for 2?
Yes. That's perfect.
Adam Gase is going to get fired. There's no doubt about it. It was a ridiculous hire to begin with. I'm not sure anybody can change around the Jets because they just are a bad organization.
When is the last time? Here's a quiz for you. The last time the Jets changed coaches midseason. I saw this on Twitter this morning.
Last time they changed.
And it's a very interesting name in football lore who got fired midseason or before the conclusion of the season.
For the Jets? Huh. Really?
Was it Rex Ryan?
No.
Or did he get fired at the after?
I'm going to say no on Rexy.
It is not Rex
Ryan. Why are you asking this? So there's a reason you're asking this. And so they are you saying the hint is they typically don't fire in the middle of the season? Is that what you're saying?
That is correct.
Then I'm going to go, let's see, Herm. No, I don't think it would be Herm. Probably you're asking, okay, this is going to be my answer because I think you've given us a hint. And I don't know this for sure, but my guess is going to be it would be Belichick.
Nope.
He never coached a game.
He never coached a game.
So Parcells.
Nope.
Parcells.
Was it Pete Carroll?
Nope. And it's actually, my hint is going to throw you off base a little bit because the guy that succeeded.
Mangini?
Yes. No, so you guys will not get it. You got to go back to 1975,
really?
The last time the Jets fired a coach midseason. Now, the Jets, as you guys just pointed out, they've had a rough, rocky history at times, right? They've had some rocky times. Rich Kotite and Eric Mangini. They had some years where it didn't go very well. But you got to go back to 1975, and I even didn't get this right. 1975, Ken Shipp took over for Charlie Winner. But see, this is not. Maybe I am right. 1976, Lou Holtz is the guy I was thinking. Lou Holtz went 3-10. And I don't know if he got fired or resigned. I guess officially he resigned. And Mike Holovac, who Floyd knows very well, because he succeeded. Mike Holovac was sort of his mentor for the Oilers as the GM. But Mike Holovac took over for Lou Holtz in 1976 for the last game. I think Holtz bolted for a college job. He kind of pulled a, what's the guy's name from Arkansas that we always get on who coached at Western Kentucky? Why am I blanking on his name? Who left the Falcons high and dry?
Petrino.
Bobby Petrino, yeah. He pulled a Petrino in 1976 to head for Arkansas.
He left for Arkansas too?
Lou Holtz left for Arkansas, yeah, in 1976.
Oh, that's right, yeah. So damn. So twice, two NFL teams have been stiffed to take Atlanta Falcon jobs. I mean, wow. I mean, to take an Arkansas job. Wow.
Now, did Petrino leave for Arkansas or for Louisville? I guess he left for Arkansas, right?
He left for Arkansas. Remember, okay. He was calling the Hawks.
So he went from Louisville to
in the middle of the Falcons season.
He went from Louisville to the Falcons.
He put up notes in the player's locker.
Yeah, he put up notes. Remember Algie Crumpler? Don't ask him about that.
Oh, yeah.
Yikes.
So it's been a while since the Jets fired a coach in the middle of the season, but it is the walls are closing in on Adam Gase.
The Jets are so – I mean, the Jets and Falcons are so bad – that their coaches leave to take the job at Arkansas in midseason. That's how bad that those organizations are. Wow. Man. Of course, the Falcons, I shouldn't say. They're way better than the Jets.
But everything went so smoothly for Bobby Petrino at Arkansas.
Yeah. Well, it was. The winning, the field, the product
on the
field,
I guess it wasn't
good.
That bad. But
wasn't bad. No, it was really good, but it was a mess.
Had a little while.
Behind the scenes.
Issue
all right,
there.
Let's learn a little bit more about a team in the West in the SEC. It's not Arkansas, it's LSU. We do that next. All right, the LSU Tigers will be coming to town to take on Vanderbilt here in Nashville, and it may be an angry bunch if they lost at home to Mississippi State, as we talked about this week. Back here on Darren Donick and Chase, ESPN 102.5 The Game. Speaking of ESPN, ESPN Baton Rouge, Matt Muscana is on the line with us. He covers LSU for them. Certainly knows the lay of the land. Matt, how you doing?
Guys, I'm doing great. Thanks for the invite.
How strange has this week of shows been?
This week has been... It's been interesting because normally after LSU loses a game, there's a general melt. And there was some of that, but I think Saturday there was still some sort of basking in the afterglow of a 15-0 season.
Okay.
And so maybe the sting wasn't as bad, which is an odd feeling. But I think the other thing that underscores is just how impressive it is for Clemson and Alabama and Ohio State and the programs that have success and are back there every single year, because that success isn't enough. It's not sustainable. They have to seek more, and I think LSU as a program is learning that right now.
Interesting. So their defense, I don't think anybody could have predicted that. We know all the losses, and you don't have Stingley Jr. there. I mean, he's one of the best defenders in the country. Looks like he'll be back here for this game. But how could anybody have seen that coming? And I guess now moving forward, Bo Pelini and that defense, how much cause for concern is there with this Tigers defense, or is there?
So I'll answer the first part about, you know, could you have seen that coming? Even with all the losses, I mean, they've been playing SEC football for roughly 90 years, and that's the most passing yards allowed in a game ever.
Yeah.
So I don't think anybody could have foreseen that. I think it would have been naive for anybody that's going to play a Mike Leach offense to not assume they're going to have success moving the football. That's what his whole game plan is predicated on, and he's done it everywhere he's been. To that level, it was obviously a surprise. What that told us about LSU is, I think, kind of the fear that I know that I had, many had, which is, while LSU's frontline guys, I think, are still as good as any, the problem is when you have a talent exodus like LSU had, with 14 guys drafted, 20 on NFL rosters, and Jamar Chase and Tyler Shelvin and Kerry Vincent all opt out, the problem is your depth is just gutted. So you remove Derek Stingley, and the domino effect in that ball game was guys that had only played nickel now had to play boundary. Guys that weren't even expected to play were suiting up and playing 40, 50 snaps. It challenged LSU's depth, which, as we learned Saturday, isn't up to par yet. So I don't know that you can make a far-reaching analysis of that game on Bo Pelini. I don't think it's a referendum on him as a coach or what he'll be at LSU. I just think this year, the thing that's going to be LSU's Achilles heel is its lack of depth, and that was exposed Saturday.
You bring up the word exodus, and we knew that, you know, Joe Burrow leaving, there's going to be a drop-off no matter who it is. I mean, he was special, as you know, but it looked like the drop-off was pretty significant. How much concern is there at the quarterback position?
So, I mean, that's the two questions everybody here has talked about all week has been, obviously, the secondary, giving up the passing yards, and then Miles Brennan. And look, in a vacuum, if you just look at, you know, 340 yards and three touchdowns, I mean, 3 years ago in Baton Rouge, that would have been celebrated. I mean, a place that struggled with the forward pass. We're bemoaning a guy throwing for 340 yards and three scores. But I think context does matter. And if you actually watch the game, there were a lot of plays that Miles left out on the field. And maybe the most disappointing thing was, you know, a guy waits 4 years for his turn. I just would have thought he'd have been more aggressive. Like, I'll give you one example in particular. If you watch the game, if you did, there was a play where Brennan threw an interception and his arm got hit and the ball fluttered. Well, the receiver was 5 to 7 yards already of separation with the cornerback. I mean, he was wide open. The ball should have come out, you know, 2 seconds, two clicks before that it did, and allowed the pass to be, you know, to be intercepted, his arm to be hit. That's where you just need to see a little more decisiveness from Brennan. It's not a physical thing, guys. He's got size and arm strength and talent and all that stuff, and it's not a mental thing either. Miles knows the offense. He's as smart as they come. He doesn't just know his role. He knows every receiver, the line, the protection. He's got all of that. It's just that proverbial, you know, it, that, you know, people say, well, the game just has to slow down. I think that's all it is. Even though he's a fourth-year guy who's making his first start, and I think he just needed to slow down a little bit. So we'll see if he improves there this weekend. But I think a lot of people understood it was going to be a transition from what Joe was to whatever was going to be next. And we saw that on Saturday.
Matt Muscana is with us, covers LSU, and, of course, he's a reporter for ESPN Baton Rouge. And so, Matt, let's talk about sort of the big picture. First, well, I'm curious your perspective on the whole 60 Minutes thing from Ed Orgeron. You know, we were talking about this, just how crazy it would have been to think about Ed Orgeron being featured on 60 Minutes a few years before when it looked right. like he wasn't going to make it through the season. He was just like, he was dead man walking. When are they going to fire him? It's just not going well. And then here he is a few years later being featured on a non-sports show, right, for one of the bigger shows you could possibly be on, for sure.
Yeah, I mean, the longest-running news magazine show yeah. in history, 60 Minutes. It's amazing. Life comes at you quick, man. We just passed last week the four-year mark of Les Miles being fired after that Auburn game, and it has been one heck of a roller coaster for LSU football since then. From the depths of losing to Troy and getting blown out by Mississippi State to what we saw last year of, you know, inarguably the greatest season in college football history. So, you know, Ed, I think, is an example. The interesting thing that I'm going to be fascinated to watch in college football is if Ed Orgeron does become somewhat of a test case for other programs. I think we're seeing it at Arkansas. What I mean is, you know, Ed Orgeron won a title without really a specialty, right? He's never been a coordinator. So Ed sort of built this program with the idea of, okay, I love LSU from Louisiana. I can recruit like mad. Let me do that, be the figurehead, hire great coordinators, delegate, and build up. And I don't know if you've noticed, guys, but Arkansas basically did the same thing. They hired Sam Pittman, who's an Arkansas guy, line coach, emotional, rah-rah, great recruiter, and he went and hired two coordinators. Barry Odom, who had been a head coach in the SEC, and I'm blanking on the coordinator. He was the OC at Baylor. His dad was the head. Kendall Briles.
Right.
So he went and got two really well-known coordinators to try to build around him. So I know it's a long-winded answer, but I think Ed's rise has been something that's caught so many people's attention that I think it may actually end up having a longer-term effect in college football, at least as how ADs hire head coaches. In the way, remember the fad 10 years ago was the coach in waiting? Everybody had a coach in waiting. Well, right. With no coach in waiting, I mean, you all learned this. I mean, James Franklin was a coach in waiting at Maryland when Vanderbilt hired him. So yeah. It's like that was sort of the fad then. I'm wondering if Ed's success may not create this sort of copycat mold in college football.
So much was made about bringing in Brady. Remember the guru, the 29-year-old. Yeah. And he's not there anymore, so it's easy after one game to say, well, they're going to be missing him. But do you think that's a fair thing to observe, Matt, or is that overblown?
So I've talked about Joe Brady a lot this offseason, and I think it is disingenuous to completely minimize the impact that he had. But I also think something that many people have lost sight of is Joe Brady was not the offensive coordinator a year ago. Steve Ensminger was. Joe Brady did not work with the quarterbacks. Steve Ensminger and George Munoz did. And Dave Aranda took Munoz with him to Baylor. Brady worked with receivers. And his specialty was kind of third down pass plays and things like that. You know, he did some of the zone read concepts. I guess, you know, Brady came to Baton Rouge at a point where it was this perfect confluence of events where you had Joe Burrow, who was this generational quarterback. You had all the talent there, and he was undoubtedly an unlock, right? He was a missing, like, the corner piece on the puzzle that was otherwise finished. But he wasn't the body of the puzzle. So I had no problem with LSU's play calling on Saturday. I just described, you know, the play where Miles threw an interception, I mean, that was a beautiful play call. LSU had really set that up. It softened up the middle with the run, and then that was a play fake. It was executed almost to perfection if the ball comes out earlier. So I don't want to minimize the impact Brady had because it was significant in that moment a year ago. I just don't know if Joe Brady is there on Saturday if it makes a material difference.
We're talking to Matt Mascona, ESPN Baton Rouge, about LSU coming to town to take on Vanderbilt. So, you know, we're obviously here in Nashville and talk to Coach Mason on a weekly basis. We keep up with Vandy. They gave Texas A&M a fight. There are no moral victories, but if there were, I think that would be a pretty good one. So from afar, as you're around LSU, what do you see from Vanderbilt with their revamped offense and defense?
I don't know what to make of Ken Seals. I know he's a winner in high school. The thing about Vanderbilt a year ago was you knew Keyshawn Vaughn and Kalijah Lipscomb were players that were going to be Sunday guys. And I don't know if Vanderbilt has any of those on offense right now. Maybe they do. I know Abdur-Rahman at receiver is a guy who had a nice day last week, but I also know Derek Stingley is going to be back. So from LSU standpoint, you feel really good telling Stingley, hey, you got him. Don't let him breathe and we'll figure the rest out. I think Vanderbilt's strength in this game is its defensive line, and maybe its entire defensive front seven if Demetri Moore's going to play. I don't know if you guys might be able to let me know if he's going to play. I don't know if he's going to play. But you know, that defensive front seven against a remade LSU offensive line, which gave up seven sacks against Mississippi State, really struggled and is going to be without its starting left tackle on Saturday. I think that's an area where maybe Vanderbilt could give LSU some problem and end up in a game similar to what they did in College Station, where you're in a 14-12 ball game going into the fourth quarter, and if a ball bounces left instead of right, maybe you have a chance to win it. Guys, I still think LSU is the more talented team and should win, and it's a reason it's a three-score spread. But I do think that that's a spot where that's a matchup on the line, the Vanderbilt defensive front seven against LSU's offensive line, where maybe Vandy has an edge, and that could be significant enough to keep it low-scoring enough to give him a chance late in the ballgame to try to win it.
Demetri Moore is expected to play, but no official word.
That's okay.
That's what I was able to find out. So I am curious, Matt, of you know, the Bayou Bengals, obviously the team you talk about, with Burrow's success last year, are people in your market more interested in Cincinnati? Are they keeping up with him, or is it simply
our radio group reached out to the Bengals to carry the Bengals games on our radio station. We're the LSU flagship. And by the way, the Bengals said no.
Really?
They said no. I think they wanted something. They said like maybe next year or something. Or they wanted like a 3-year commitment or something. I don't know all the particulars, but the Bengals basically rejected us. Yeah. So
wow.
They wanted to carry Bengals games this year. So yes, people here are definitely Cincinnati Bengal fans. There's no doubt about it. Like, people are watching horrendous football just to watch Joe Burrow, yes.
Is it a little weird for them to see him throw to T. Higgins?
No, I don't think so at all. I think that's kind of cool, man. I saw a mock draft this week where I think it was maybe Pro Football Focus had the Bengals taking Ja'Marr Chase, which that would be super intriguing if those two hooked up again. But I think, you know, I don't want to like completely break down the Cincinnati Bengals, but I was kind of excited for Joe to go there. The offensive line is horrendous, and if they might get him killed. But they have a lot of nice offensive weapons, man. Get a healthy A.J. Green, got T. Higgins, you got a 1,000-yard receiver from a year ago, you got a good running back in Joe Mixon. I mean, there's some talent on the offensive side of the ball there to work with Joe. Just they got to keep him upright, man. They're going to get him split in half.
They said no. That's the part I can't get past.
Isn't that crazy?
No. That doesn't make any sense. Like, the Bengals are good. Hey, no, we're good. We don't need any more markets. We're good.
Oh, crazy, man.
Matt, always appreciate the visits. Thanks so much. Enjoy your weekend. We'll talk to you down the road.
Okay, guys. Be well.
Matt Mascona, ESPN Baton Rouge. There you go. A little flavor on the LSU Tigers who come to town to take on Vanderbilt this Saturday. And it can be heard on 93.3 Classic Hits, part of our Cromwell family Why would Cincinnati say no? I mean, I just don't understand that. Makes no sense. That.
No, and when he said that, I kind of, okay, are the Saints blocking it? You know, is that because that's, I guess, their territory? But right. That's silly. That's silly.
That makes zero sense. Why would you say no? Three-year deal.
People want to hear your games?
People want to hear your games in Louisiana? You say, nah, we're good? What? Since when are you good in Cincinnati? What?
I don't get that.
Oh, by the way, how intriguing would that be if they drafted Chase, huh?
I think they'd
probably sign a three-year deal down in Baton Rouge for Cincinnati games, would be my guess.
Yeah, I would think at that point they realize that they have another market that they can take it, you know, take an advantage of getting that market. I think that would be a good move for them.
Did you guys, you know, going back to the Jets-Broncos game, because, you know, you couldn't really pay really, really close attention without drifting away to other things because it just didn't allow you. I mean, just look at the matchup. But did you happen to look at the Jets' remaining schedule? Now, they're 0-4, right? Have you looked at their schedule?
I haven't.
I do know that whatever you're about to read, in a nutshell, I saw this flash up on the screen this morning. I think it was on ESPN. I was just flipping around. But they have the highest chance of any team of going winless.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they are. I mean, there's not. They have. I guess they have the Dolphins twice. Okay, they got the Cardinals, the Chargers. Okay, Chargers. They got a lot of ton of injuries there. Yeah. Okay. Buffalo, Kansas City, New England, Miami twice, which is interesting. Miami in back-to-back weeks, separated by a bye week.
Yeah.
Right, but still, like, when do you play a team in the NFL in back-to-back weeks, right? Like, you play them twice before you play anybody else. Las Vegas Raiders, Seattle, the Rams, the Browns, and New England. So they have New England twice, too. I mean, you tell me where a win's coming. I mean, I see possibly a 1 or 2 win season, possibly. And here's the thing. If they get the number one pick, what are they going to do?
They're going to take Trevor Lawrence.
But are they? It's the Jets. So
I understand that. But if they don't take Trevor Lawrence, then they should just give up.
If I'm running the show, I'm taking Trevor Lawrence and saying, Sam, we love you, man. Sorry, man. We're going to be looking to trade you. I'm taking Trevor Lawrence.
And if I'm Sam Darnold, I'd probably be like, okay. No hard feelings.
Right. But will they? Because it looks like, I mean, that schedule is brutal. I don't see the wins. I don't see this massive turnaround for the Jets. So they look like they're on a collision course for the number one pick in the draft.
What about the Giants?
Of course.
Who are they going to be?
You're right. They don't look much better.
Can you imagine?
Saquon Barkley, man. They got nothing.
Can you imagine doing sports radio in New York right now? Oh, both teams are just abysmal.
Well, you've got
they don't hold
Willie's
back. Matt,
you've got, now just think about the number one market in the country. You've got Willie's Mets. You know the theme there, constant heartache. The Knicks, my goodness. When was the last time the Knicks were relevant in the NBA?
Well, the Mets were relevant a lot. I mean, in fairness
Mets. I didn't say the Mets weren't relevant. I said all the stuff that they've had. They have a lot of dumb things happen to them. You would have to admit that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Like we use the term, of course, it's typical. It's the Mets.
Yeah, the Mets have a lot of follies for about 5 or 6 years, and then every 5 or 6 years they have a couple of good years, and then they have the cycle start over again. But
they're not the Knicks. I'm not comparing
them to the Knicks.
No, they are not the Knicks.
The Knicks are a complete train wreck and have been for decades now.
Yeah.
But then you have the Giants and Jets. And, you know, the Yankees are still in, so they're going to be the focus right now. And then, you know, the Rangers have the first pick
side.
In the draft.
Yeah, Rangers and Islanders, fine. What about the Nets?
Well, they were big in the news. Now, that it's the Brooklyn Nets. I don't know how much of the spotlight they get in New York, but they do have a couple of megastars that are already. I mean, Kyrie's always up for saying something that tweaks people, right?
It's a good way to put it.
Yeah, that's a nice way of putting it.
He just did it yesterday.
Of course.
So that will be interesting. You know, how much, when they crank it back up, will the Brooklyn Nets be the focal point of New York basketball? But, hey, New York. Well, and I've got – this is going to lead us into my who's on the list because of the aftermath of last night's game. The media up there, unreal.
If you have not heard, the Titans-Steelers game hit has been made official. It will be a Week 7 game here in Nashville, which is October 25th. Seating capacity will go up for that contest. It'll be 15% at Nissan Stadium. The Ravens and Steelers will now play their game in Week 8. That was supposed to be the Steelers' bye week. So that's been pushed to a Week 8 contest. So the Steelers will get the Titans and the Ravens in back-to-back weeks. So if you have not heard that, that has been made official by the league. When we come back, we'll make it official on who or what has made you mad. 615-737-1025, 737-1025. You just made the list. Next.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.